what your readers may, your listeners may not understand, is that HIPAA is not a privacy rule. HIPAA is a data sharing rule, and it gave them the ability to access all this data without our consent. If they get this national patient identification number, all they'll have to do is put that number in, and they've got all of your data without your consent to do what almost whatever they want with it. You could become a research subject without your consent. You could have, they could link all of your family medical records and your records together and try to figure out exactly what kind of an expense you're going to be for the healthcare system, according to whatever your grandparents contracted, whatever your parents contracted. You know, they can look at your entire lifestyle. They can look at everything that you say in the exam room that a doctor has put in there. But we need everybody to contact their members of the Senate and the House and say, no, we don't want a national patient identification number.
I'm proud to share with you Tetragen, which helps you transition to a healthier, happier, and thinner you without cravings or side effects. Our metabolic hormones are the underlying problem that doom every diet and exercise program to fail. They control our metabolism, cravings, how much we eat to feel satiated, blood sugar levels, and even our energy levels. Tetragen is formulated with four clinically proven patented ingredients that help rebalance your metabolic hormones in roughly 15 to 20 days, depending on the amount of weight you want to lose. Once your metabolic hormones are rebalanced, you'll be on the path of long-term, sustainable weight loss because Tetragen is the first in the world which is scientifically formulated with four clinically proven and patented active ingredients to help you reach your targeted weight in two distinct phases. Phase one, rebalance your metabolic hormones, and phase two, accelerate fat loss. The best part is that Tetragen comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. So what do you have to lose besides weight? Learn more with the link below.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This episode, I have Twyla Braze coming to the show, and you're going to like this one. Well, you're not going to like all the information she's going to bring forward, because we're going to be talking about the national healthcare ID that is barreling through Congress, and the only person that's keeping it from happening right now is Rand Paul. And we need to give him support. And she's going to talk about this national healthcare ID where we each get a healthcare ID and everything about us. Literally all of our healthcare information is going to be on this ID and they can share it. And they have all access on everything. It's a government federally deal that they're working on. And it's so far along, you wouldn't believe it. And then she talks about other developments in the healthcare industry. There was a presidential executive order that Trump put through, and she explains what it's about. It's a Medicare and also Social Security. It's Clinton put it through back in the day so that if you didn't join Medicare, you couldn't get Social Security benefits. And she talks about it, and it's an evil thing they put together. You have to be part of our federal healthcare insurance. Otherwise, you don't get any of the money that you paid in through all of your working history. So she talks about that. And then she talks about the wedge. The wedge is an exciting initiative that they're working on. I'm seriously, and my husband's seriously looking into joining the wedge to get out of the healthcare system, and you pay cash only. And it's a great thing they're working on. I talked to her about it 4 years ago, and now it's real. It's developed. There are multiple doctors in my area. I'm sure in every state now there's multiple doctors that can work with you. I know in mine I have 16 different doctors just in the metropolitan area. So I'm very excited about that, and it's going to save you a ton of money. And we talk about that. Great. And then she sticks around for my patrons and talks about the DNA and the genome and what they're doing storing these with babies. And you will be you won't be happy about what they're doing, what the government's doing, the games they're playing. Texas is the only one that dealt with it legitimately. There are 16 states that are barreling through, don't care what people think at this point. And she's going to talk about the lawsuits that are going. Her organization is on the front edge of giving us healthcare freedom and giving her whatever support you can. She has a book called Big Brother, Get Out of the Operating Room. Okay, that was pretty close to the title. I'll have the name of it up. I should have notes here, but I don't, but it's almost exactly right. I have the picture. I recommend getting the book. There's so much good information in there. But essentially, getting Big Brother out of our healthcare system. And she's been working on this for decades. This is her life passion. She is the guru in this area and is blazing trails. And I am so proud of the work that she's doing. And I highly recommend going to her websites and learning all about this, especially this ID and supporting Rand Paul. Call your congresspeople. Tell them you do not want this national ID that they're going to be forcing down our throats if this gets passed. So anyways, let's get into this really good interview with Twyla Braze. Hi, Twyla. Welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you. So glad to be here, Sarah.
Let's talk about the patient identifier number first. There's so many issues to talk to you about, but that one, it kind of gets into technocracy. It gets into Big Brother, your book on Big Brother and in the patient room. What is the name of your book again? Make sure I say it right.
It's Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records.
And we both know it's very dangerous. And you do talk about this ID. What are they going to be doing with this ID? People are worried about tracking your DNA. They're tracking about all this stuff. What are they going to be doing with this ID? Why do we need an ID tracked to our body for our healthcare?
Well, obviously, we do not need such a thing, and we have never had such a thing ever in this country. But the proponents want it because they want several things. They want to have all of our data accessible with one keystroke. They put in your number. They've got all your data from womb to tomb. They would have it all to do whatever they want with it, because what your listeners may not understand is that HIPAA is not a privacy rule. HIPAA is a data sharing rule, and it gave them the ability to access all this data without our consent. And so that means, if they get this national patient identification number, all they'll have to do is put that number in, and they've got all of your data without your consent to do almost whatever they want with it. And so, but the other thing that it's meant to do that people aren't talking about is it's meant to create a national medical record system, a government medical record system of all the data and all the patients in the country, with just one number to identify all the records in this system. And so that's what their plan is, and our plan is to stop them.
Well, and it just passed the House, right? So it's like barreling down, being put in place. It just passed the House. What do you think is going to pass the Senate, and when is that going to be voted on?
Well, I think the thing to understand about this is, when HIPAA happened, it included a unique patient identifier for every patient. So that is actually law today. But what happened right after that is that Congressman Ron Paul, he put a prohibition on every appropriations bill since 1998, stopping the funding and development of this national patient ID. Now he's out of office, but his son Rand Paul has continued in his steps. But the House, which are Democrats now, and it's all run by the Democrats, and it's also being pushed by all the data industry, by the healthcare industry, by the government. They all want it, and they think this is the time. But so we're really working with the Senate, because Senator Rand Paul is in there, and he is doing his very best to stop this. He could put a hold on the bill and just hold it, and they'd have to take it to a floor fight if they wanted to pass it through. So we're working with him. I will be meeting with the committee, the main committee, to tell them why this is a really bad idea. I'll be in Washington, D.C. in a bit here. And I'll be telling them why this is a bad idea, why this will set up a surveillance system, why it will set up a national medical record system that won't protect anybody's privacy and will make all our data available. And so, yes, the House has passed it, but they won't necessarily get it past the Senate. And that's our hope. But we need everybody to contact their members of the Senate and the House and say, no, we don't want a national patient identification number.
I'm horrified. Okay, let's lay it out for people. Mm-hmm. And I know you put this in your book. Lay out some of the scenarios that this ID is going to put an average American into. Because my mind just started racing, and I started getting chills, like, oh my God, this is happening right now. But can you lay out some scenarios as to what you know, what an average American is going to, it's going to happen to them, to having an ID, that, you know, some of the nightmare scenarios that could happen.
So the first nightmare scenario, which most people don't even think about, is this will be a no card, no care situation. You will not be able to access care without this number, without this card. When President Clinton first suggested this card, he held it up and he called it a national security card, and it would have had this number. And so that's their plan, is that you wouldn't be able to access care without this number. So that's a really important thing to understand. And once you have this patient tracking number and patient access number, then I can tell you some of the ways that the data will be used. So you could become a research subject without your consent. You could have, they could link all of your family medical records and your records together and try to figure out exactly what kind of an expense you're going to be for the healthcare system, according to whatever your grandparents contracted, whatever your parents contracted. You know, they can look at your entire lifestyle. They can look at everything that you say in the exam room that a doctor has put in there. They can make, they want to do predictive analytics. They want to add your Fitbit data, your any data that you, when you go into the portal of your medical record, they want to add that data all into your medical record. They want to have all your social media, your behavioral information, how you eat, when you sleep. And, you know, that's not a stretch. The woman who has the largest electronic health record system in the country, she created it. It's called Epic. And she says she doesn't want it to be called an electronic health record anymore. She wants it to be called a comprehensive health record. And I quote her in my book because, and I'm paraphrasing now, but she basically says, we want to know how often you sleep. We want to know what you eat. We want to know what your social conditions are. And that's where the electronic health record, that's where this entire surveillance system is going. And so everything would be attached to this unique patient identifier. It would become a complete dossier on every American through the electronic health record. At the time when you are the most vulnerable, when you need care, when you're going to the doctor because there's something wrong with you, is the time when they're going to be gathering all this information on you. I mean, in the book, I talk about what to do with questionnaires or not to do with questionnaires. I let you know that nothing is private because of HIPAA. I talk about coercive consent forms. And you have to be careful about all of those things. A coercive consent form is something that has consent for treatment at the top of the piece of paper. And then at the bottom, it's got one signature. Just one place for one signature. And then there's all this stuff in between, like sharing for researchers, sharing for third parties, being part of this, being part of that. And, you know, most people think, well, I'm here, I have to sign in order to get access to care because it says consent for treatment at the top. That's a coercive consent form, and you shouldn't be signing those, and all sorts of things should be crossed out. But so this is what the electronic health record is meant to do. It's not meant to take care of you. I think that's really important to understand. That's one of the reasons I wrote the book, to say it's not what you think it is. It is the basis of a surveillance system. And it is gathering all this information. It doesn't work for doctors who want to take care of you. Just ask your doctor. Ask your doctor what he or she thinks about the system, how easy it is to find the data, how much time it takes to input the data. Look at your doctor. Are they looking at you anymore? Are they touching you? Are they talking to you? Are they just asking you questions to fill out the blanks in the electronic health record? So the UPI, or the unique patient identifier, or the national patient ID, whatever you want to call it, this is a number to pull all the data in all the electronic records all over the country together in something called the eHealth Exchange. And that is, it used to be called the National Health Information Network. But what we're talking about is a national electronic medical record system that makes all of your data accessible to all of these people under HIPAA who can have access to it. And all they really need is that one number. And all they'll be able to just like press a button and all your information will be right there from womb to tomb.
And they can get specifically you. I mean, it's not like it's metadata, but it's your name. It's everything about you. So if they want to discriminate against you, they can. We don't want this person on the insurance because why don't you guys take them? Because they're going to cost us a lot of money. Or we, if we need to ration, they're going to be the first ones to go. I mean, that's a nightmare.
Yep, or think about the genetic information. So now, you know, they're doing newborn screening on children. They've been doing that for a long time, but they're moving towards sequencing children. The federal government has actually done a $25 million project on newborn sequencing, which means they lay out everything that's in your DNA, and then it becomes part of a government record. And so this is what newborn screening is, genetic testing by the government. Most parents don't realize that. And this is where they're moving, is to have your entire genetic code in your medical record. Now, so just imagine that Jimmy is going to marry Susie, right? But now they got the information on Jimmy and Susie all the way down to their DNA. And they look and go, oh, that might be a really expensive combination if they have children. I mean, that's part of the thing that can happen too, once they have all this information on you and they're trying to cut costs and they're trying to control what the doctors do. They determine that certain people shouldn't be together, or certain people don't need certain types of care, or you're only going to live this long, so this is not available for you. You know, all that sort of thing can happen, because we say he who holds the data makes the rules. And so if you want freedom, you cannot have a surveillance system. And that's what this is becoming. And the unique patient identifier, or the national patient ID, is the final linchpin in the creating this system.
This is crazy.
So we have to stop it.
We absolutely have to stop it. Okay, so what do people need to do? They need to contact their senators, or their Congress is just not even worth contacting anymore, it sounds like. You have to contact your senators.
Yes, except for the fact that nobody expects that bill to make it intact as it is. So at the very end of the day, all the members of Congress, all the senators are all going to have to vote on whatever the final product is. So if it's sitting in there, they all need to be aware that they don't want that to be in the appropriations bill. Whatever the final appropriations bill, you have to tell all of them. And then I would say give strong support. Contact Senator Rand Paul's office and tell him why you don't want this. Give him fodder. Give him ammunition to come to those Senate committees and say, hey, I've heard from people all over the country who say, I don't want a national patient ID. Don't do this. Don't issue me a new federal number that will connect all of my medical records together, that will put me into a national medical record system that all these people can access. Don't do this to me. Give him that kind of ammunition. Senator Rand Paul. He's the one that's fighting to stop it.
Okay. They're also doing a social credit system, right?
Oh.
That has been really well documented. Silicon Valley's working on it. They're testing it out in China, but they're talking about it very openly. Is it possible that they would be so blatant, so ballsy to
bold,
that's a better word, gutsy, to use the social credit system to not, because now they have this health ID number to say you're not being a good person, where you don't get health care.
Well, the one thing about this country is when things that become really egregious become known, someone will sue. And we still do have a constitution, and it becomes a long and a messy. We still do have the Constitution. We still have the Constitution. Whether or not people are following it the way any of us would like it to be followed, it's still the Constitution. We haven't changed any of the words, so it's still there. And it is still the highest law of the land. And so, you know, the people have to fight to keep the Constitution intact and working and being followed. So, as you know, there are too many people who, you know, raised their hand and gave an oath to defend the Constitution, and then they, you know, they don't even remember that it exists, and they pass all these laws and they say yes and things that are unconstitutional. So yes, but that it really, the country is up to the public. The public has to help save and protect the country. So now when we as an organization, Citizens Council for Health Freedom, give you something to do to protect the country, to protect freedom, to keep ourselves from having a surveillance system through the exam room, this is when the people of America must act. And so it's not that hard to simply tweet Rand Paul, text Rand Paul, and now you can't text him. Tweet him, email him, send a letter to his office, call his office, you know, give him lots, and then tell your own members. it has to happen. I mean, people have to stand up for themselves because their members only do what their constituents want when the constituents actually talk to them.
Yeah, well, this is critical. Okay, there was a presidential executive order that came through just last week. What was that on, and how does that affect us?
So it's a great thing that this happened, and maybe a little history. Well, I'll start with just saying what it does is it disconnects Medicare enrollment from access to Social Security benefits. Now, most people wouldn't even thought twice about this because they're just planning to go into Medicare. They're planning to sign up for Social Security. But there are other people who don't really want to be in Medicare. And with Medicare going insolvent in 6 years, there's a lot of people who should look at getting out of Medicare because it's going to just ration care and ratchet down on the care that you can access. Okay, but here's what the executive order did. What the executive order did was it took away what President Clinton's administration did in 1993. In 1993, they put language into a procedural operations manual at the Social Security Administration. And that is that's the manual that's followed for how Social Security works. And what it said was, if you refuse or don't take Medicare, you cannot have access to your Social Security benefits. The other thing that the other language that they added said, if you are in Medicare and you decide to disenroll from Medicare, you must pay back every Medicare benefit that you have received to date and all Social Security benefits that you have ever received.
Now, that's just awful. It's awful. But I'm surprised it was even. I'm surprised it was able to stand this long. But keep going. I shouldn't be surprised, actually.
So for 26 years, essentially, this is what the Social Security Administration has been following. It's not law, right? And in 2008, there was a lawsuit. A former House Majority Leader, Dick Armey, joined that lawsuit. But it did not succeed. It went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear it. And so then it sort of the whole initiative to get rid of this died until President Trump got elected. And that's when our organization said, we think we can make this happen. President Trump is the president who would be willing to strip the Clintons' language out. And so on Thursday, October 3rd, in the executive order on Medicare, Section 11, President Trump calls on the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Social Security Administration to change any and all rules and policies that would prohibit a person from getting access to their Social Security benefits if they refuse Medicare. So all of that language is going to go away. We worked for 3 years. We had many, many meetings with the administration and the White House and HHS. We had all these meetings. And we're just thrilled that that's in here because now it means there's an escape hatch for Medicare.
Congratulations. Good job. Okay, well, keep going. I had to give you that little pat because I know how hard you work on this. Go, keep going.
Well, most people can't afford to do without their Social Security benefits, so they were tied in, locked into, made captive by Medicare. And so I think that this probably was Hillary's plan or, you know, somebody in the administration, right, who said we got to make sure that they never get out because we want to make a national healthcare system. We can't have them getting out. And so now everybody can get out. So now we hope that there will be a market for lifelong health insurance so that you could have private insurance for the entirety of your life. You'd never have to go onto the dole, which is what Medicare is. You'd never have to face the rationing in Medicare. We want an entire market to start up. And this President Trump has righted a wrong. This was a wrong and a very long-lasting wrong.
Yeah.
And he has righted this. And another thing that this will do is, you know, they're trying to do Medicare for all, right? This will make sure that nobody ever has to be in Medicare. So we're thrilled. And we hope that, oh, by the way.
Well, this is a perfect sec. Go ahead.
It's 180 days that they have to do this, which takes us to March 31st. So by March 31st, they have to have the procedures in place. They have to have that objectionable language stripped out. And so then seniors will have a choice.
Well, that's so great. Oh, that's so great. Okay, well, that is a good segue to the Wedge and what that healthcare freedom is. And my husband and I are seriously looking at joining the Wedge. We wanted to, the last time we talked about this, I think it was like 4 years ago you were on, and I was serious then, but now it's really developed since then. Can you explain what the Wedge is? Because I got to tell you, we are getting, you know, the insurance is already super high, but you're getting double whammy, because if you're paying a ton for insurance and then you got this high deductible because you can't afford your insurance. So then you go to the doctor has to wait 6 months to get paid unless my doctor does. And then you pay more for that basic care than you would if you just paid cash. So you're getting hosed right. all the way around.
That's right.
So can you explain what the Wedge, yeah, it's terrible. Can you explain what the Wedge does?
So the Wedge of Health Freedom at jointhewedge.com is our way to connect patients and doctors. Doctors that only take cash, check, or charge. Doctors who have decided not to sign up with any insurance system, not to sign up with the government, and you, the patient, are their only customer. You're the only one that they're focused on, because this is how medicine should be. This is how it always was. The health plans and the government have introduced this third-party payer concept, which puts the third party as a controlling force between you and the doctor, and it also adds all this cost to the cost of care that's totally unnecessary. I mean, imagine if you had somebody in the middle of getting your groceries and cooking, right? And you paid them. You paid them to buy your groceries. Well, you know, what would they pick? Would they give you steak once a week? Probably not. They'd say, well, maybe you can have steak once a month, because now we've got your money. We've decided that's not beneficial for you to have steak once a week. And so you only get it once a month, you know, so that's what happens when you put some,
even though you're paying for steak.
Yeah. Even though you're paying
for that steak,
right?
But you're going to get the rice and the ramen noodles.
That's right. Because you gave over your control. You handed over your control. When you hand over your money, see, there used to be an insurance company that was, so we're trying to get to first party payment and away from third party payment. And so insurance used to work like this. A guy who's 80 told me that in the 1970s, he had to have heart surgery. And so his insurance company sent him a check for $68,000, which he used to pay his doctor in his hospital. The next year, he had to have surgery again, heart surgery. So they sent him a check for $72,000, which he used to pay his doctor in his hospital. And he said to me, it was very simple. And of course it was, because there was no third party payer involvement. There was nobody else, you know, getting in the middle and deciding this is our money and we're only going to give you a piece of it. And we're going to tell you what kind of care you can have and what kind of care you can't have. We're going to have a list of drugs that you can't have. And anything off that list, you're going to have to pay cash for. You know, it doesn't matter that you have paid $24,000 a year for our policy. We will tell you what you can and cannot have. And so the Wedge is meant to go back to doctors who take cash, check, or charge from you. They don't deal with third parties. They don't deal with government or insurance. But this is not insurance. This is just about the delivery of care. So you can take your insurance policy, your prepaid health care policy, which is your health plan. You can take that, and you probably won't be able to use it. But think of that deductible. You could pay $200 or $300 to go to this doctor over here who's approved in the network, or you could pay $60 to go over here to a doctor who's in the Wedge. And at the end of the day, because most people are never going to hit the top of their deductible, you have more money in your pocket. And you have a doctor who works just for you.
Well, and what you didn't get to was you're also paying more for that care than you would if you didn't have to go through the insurance in the first place, because cash only, doctors charge you less if you don't have insurance, cash only, because they don't have to mess around. It's cheaper for everyone. Now, let me ask you, there's still the problem with cancer, getting a heart attack, being hit by a bus and needing major care. What do you do for that?
Well, so we put out something that we sent it to Trump, and we call it the Made in America Healthcare Act, MAHA. And what we said is that we want to get back to real insurance. So real insurance is like what this guy had, right? But it only pays for catastrophes. That's what insurance does. It indemnifies you against these huge financial risks of a medical disaster. But today, people have these prepaid health plans, and so everything has to go through the health plan, right? We want to get back to real insurance. It only covers you for catastrophes or really expensive chronic conditions, you know, and it sets that. It's a very affordable policy. You put it in a drawer and you forget about it. Then you go and you pay cash to your cash check or charge doctor on the wedge or wherever else you find them, right? And then you use it only when you have the coma, the crash, you know, the cancer. That's what you use it for. Now, the other thing is that people who are Christians and are listening to your show can access something called medical sharing or health sharing organizations. And they're all have to be under the Affordable Care Act, because we still got the Affordable Care Act. They have to be Christian based. And so they can have this instead of insurance, instead of the health plan. And so they can have this for their coverage. And in this, you pay cash to your doctor in the hospital, because in a health sharing organization, all the members share each other's expenses. For example, in Samaritan Ministries, every member of Samaritan gets a letter every month and tells them who to send their check to and why. So like you might hear that Mary Anderson is being treated for an appendicitis. Send your check of $200 or $100 or whatever it is, dollars to Mary Anderson. And that's how you, and then if you ever have a catastrophic event, Mary Anderson is gonna, might be one of those that is asked to send you money to pay for those bills. But those bills are all then done on a cash basis. And so it's negotiated on a cash basis to bring the price down to what it really should be and what really most hospitals actually receive. Do you have time for me to tell you an interesting story that will Yes. let people know how inexpensive care can be?
Yes, yes.
So this woman said that she got a surgery and she looked at her EOB, her explanation of benefits, and she saw that the surgery cost $43,000. But then she noticed that her health plan paid the hospital only $3,700. And she had paid $800 for her copay or her coinsurance. So she knew that the hospital had only gotten $4,500. And the surgery was listed at $43,000. So she called up the hospital and she said, hey, you're getting ripped off. Have you seen? They've only paid you $3,700. And the hospital said, oh yeah, that's our agreed upon amount.
They're frustrated too, because they're not getting enough. But the thing is, people who don't have the right insurance have to pay that $43,000.
That's right. And the hospitals are taking them to court. They might only make $14,000 in a year, and the nonprofit, tax exempt, charitable hospitals are taking them to court. This is wrong. And this is something that we have talked to members of Congress about. They should lose their tax exempt status if they are not going to act charitable. They're supposed to be a nonprofit acting charitable. They don't pay any taxes. What are they doing?
Taking
somebody
advantage
that makes only $14,000 a year. And when they will take $3,700 from a health plan, but they're going to charge the patient the full load. You know, this is not charitable, and it should be stopped. They should just lose their tax exempt status.
Well, and the poor person can't afford the deductible and health insurance. I suppose if they can do the Obamacare, right? If they're very poor, then they get in that. The problem isn't the poverty-stricken people. The problem is the people who are middle class who can't afford deductibles and the healthcare. That's where the problem is, right? I mean, because you still can't afford $16,000 a year if you have a family of four and you have a high deductible. I mean, that it just doesn't work out.
Well, it would work out if you had real insurance.
Exactly.
Because real insurance might give you a $10,000 deductible, but it might be a $52 a month payment for premium. That's a real insurance policy, because few people will ever tap into it. And so the premium is really low, and the deductible can be really high. And if you had to pay that, you could go to a bank, because then as soon as you get to the $10,000, everything is covered. But think of how much money you could save if you were only paying $52 a month, or, you know, $98 a month instead of $1,500 or $2,000 or $3,500 a month for your premium, right?
Well, now
think of how much money you would have to pay a deductible.
Now, are
and
there,
do not forget that it's cash-based, which means all the care will be less expensive anyway.
Exactly. Okay, so are there plans besides the Christian sharing plans that are approved? Are there any other catastrophic plans where you can just buy catastrophic? Is there anything out there that you recommend right now, or is it just the Christian sharing ones? Because we can all...
So you can...
Go ahead.
You can go into like e-health insurance and look and see what's available in your state. And if you qualify for an exemption, so people don't understand what the Affordable Care Act exemptions are, but a lot of them would qualify because one of the exemptions is that it can only be like, I think it's like 8.2% of your income. The premium can only be 8.2% of your income. Some people now are paying 50% of their income to afford the premium. And so there's an exemption that you don't have to have coverage. And if you qualify for an exemption, you can buy catastrophic coverage, which is a far lower deductible. It still might be a health plan. It still might be prepaid health care. It won't be the kind of insurance that we should get back to, like that guy had who pays you the check, because right now the Affordable Care Act prohibits it. But you could still come up with a fairly affordable premium if you claim an exemption and then go look for a catastrophic policy.
Okay. But now if you don't have the exemption ability, then you can, and most people in this country are Christian, not all. But if you are, you have to find some organization that will you can be part of.
As a health sharing. Yep. There's really four major ones. And I will advocate actually for one of them because only one of them, Samaritan Ministries, does not require you to go into Medicare when you turn age 65. And so you could continue Samaritan Ministries to the end of your life and you could share people's expenses to the end of your life and be part of this ministry.
Okay. Now, do you have a link for them so I can share it in the show notes for my listeners?
Yes, we actually have a complete page on health sharing and that it I can send it to you.
Yeah, well, we'll put it right up here. Is it at, what website is it at? Is it at The Wedge?
Nope, it is at cchfreedom.org.
Okay.
And you can just put health sharing in or I'll send you the specific page for it.
Perfect. Okay, and then The Wedge is also another website where you can go in and see what doctors are in your area. I have a couple that are right by me now, so I'm just pumped. And since we have to, I'm done with this health. And since we have to renew by October or November, it's coming up right now, right? I mean, we're in the period right now where we're going to have to start looking
to
do this.
It's the middle of December. So beginning of November to the middle of December.
Okay, so It's time for people to start seriously looking at this and go, okay, how the heck do I get out of this stupid matrix? And the more people who are out of it, the more people, the freer we are, right? Because then more people can afford. I mean, it's just a market grows as more people go into it, and then the more doctors are willing to go into it. So the more we do it, the more it'll grow. So it'll be a good thing.
There's a physician in Pennsylvania that just broke free. And he's only practiced for 4.5 years, but he came up to the realization that it was unethical. How the system runs is just unethical. So he put out his own shingle, and he's charging people $35 per visit. And that's an email visit, a phone visit, or an in-person visit. And this is what has to happen. And we need lots of young doctors to do it. We need older doctors to do it. And I don't know if I have told you this, and I don't think I have said it, but essentially our organization does not believe that the Affordable Care Act or Medicare will be repealed in maybe not for a very long time. But our plan is that we will empty out Medicare and empty out the Affordable Care Act. And we will all of these people will start to leave into an alternative system. So they're never under the power of the Affordable Care Act. They're never under the power of Medicare. And so when we got this escape hatch for Medicare in the executive order, that's just one of our ways. The Wedge is another one, right? We want people to be directly connected. Another one we absolutely need is to have real insurance. Once we can get the real insurance, then these three things can really work together for an alternative system.
That is perfect. Okay. And then the ID thing, that scares the heck out of me. That's a big deal, because I've been doing a lot of research on, you know, tracking people down to whatever. That scares me, because that's another piece of the puzzle of them controlling our whole financial system and our beings. Now, where can people get a hold of you? Because I think it's important that they learn as much as they can on this and support you. Again, they need to call or support Rand Paul, right? They need to talk to their congressmen, their senators about the horrible idea of this healthcare ID. And where can they learn more about you? Where maybe are you speaking? What can they else can they do?
So they can go to cchfreedom.org. And at the top of that page is where you can sign up for our national alerts, our Minnesota alerts, our weekly e-news. You can, here's my book, Big Brother in the Exam Room. And you can find that at bigbrotherinTheExamRoom.com. And you can, you know, look at anything that you need. I just had one woman telling that she takes my book to the exam room, into the hospital, every time she goes. And she shares it with her doctor, and she looks in and she gets what she needs to do to protect herself in the exam room. We also have patienttoolbox.org just launched. We're going to do a press release on it next week. And this is a website when you're in the exam or at the hospital and they've given you a coercive form or they've asked you to do something you don't want to do, you can go right into the patient toolbox. And this is going to grow as more and more people give us situations and scenarios. We're going to actually write in text of what they should do for this and that and that. But there's already things in there. There's already consent forms, bad consent forms, good consent forms, examples of what to cross out in consent forms. There's all of the people that could come into your exam room. We've given the acronym like MD, DO, P, NP, all those. So you know who's taking care of you. Some people are calling themselves a doctor and they're not a physician. And so we've got all of that in there. So you can find that at patienttoolbox.org. And then join the wedge. And I think that's it.
Excellent. Will you stay after for my patrons? Do a short segment.
I will.
Okay. Thank you so much. This has been great.